Well, it's Sunday morning, so I'm wearing a shirt. And then the question is this where I should stand to give the sermon, or can I come back down here again? Is that okay? Great. So I'll carry this down here as well. Well, when we were leaving church yesterday with my family, my daughter said something very interesting. She said, "I am shocked at how nice everybody here is." She said, "This would not happen in a Czech church." And it's true. As part of our work, we have the privilege and sometimes the pain of visiting churches all over Europe, Central and Eastern Europe. And we work with some amazing churches, but we also work with some churches that, aren't necessarily so amazing. They have some problems. And so sometimes we feel extremely welcome and sometimes not at all. And I must say, this weekend, our family have felt so, so welcomed by all of you. I wonder if you understand what you have here. Sometimes I wonder that with some churches. Like, obviously you've got problems, that's normal. Things could be better, that's normal. You know, the heating could be turned up a bit more, that's normal. but gosh, like, what a loving group of people you guys are. And just, what a great community we have felt this weekend. And maybe some of you would say, "Oh, actually, this is the first time I felt it too." But we have really, really enjoyed being here. So thank you so, so much. Like, really, thank you. And we really hope that we're not here for the last time. So, yeah, really. Okay. Now, this passage, I have read so many times, without getting much of the detail that's in there out of it. And then I heard somebody else's sermon, so a lot of what I'm going to say today is not my own exposition. It's from a friend of mine. But as I was praying about what to share with you guys this morning, I felt like, actually, this is it. So in the last weekend, the last couple of days, we have been, if I just click, there you go. We've been looking at the love that God has for us. And we've been talking about the love that he has for us that we can receive, that we should receive, how he loves us as a father, and nothing that we can ever do will take that love away. And then what is our response to that love? Our love response should be to remain in him and to love him back. So the love goes back up to him. And then out of that love that we receive, our love can then go out to our community. It should radiate. So love in, love up, and love out. So receive, respond, and radiate. And today, I'm just going to basically be giving a summary of all of that. So as we think about this Bible verse, let's think about the context. Peter and his friends, how do you think they feel? Are they a happy bunch of people right now? Not really. Life has not worked out the way they thought it would. They have spent the last 3 years following who they thought was the Messiah. And what did they expect the Messiah to do? Well, Jesus continuously told them who he was and what he was here to do. He would even tell them things like, "I am going to Jerusalem and I'm going to be beaten, I'm going to be spat on, I'm going to be whipped and I'm going to be killed." And there their response would be, "Yeah, but can we be like on your right and left when you're the big king?" Like, the disciples, they had this dream of what they thought was going to happen. And their dream was like, "We're with Jesus. It's going to be good for us." And then what happens? They see Jesus spat on and whipped and beaten and killed. It's not what they expected at all. Not only that, but let's think about poor Peter. Jesus had told Peter, "You know what? In the next 5 hours, you are going to deny knowing me 3 times. And what was Peter's response? "No way! Not me!" And that's typical Peter. All the way through the Gospels, you know, Peter's a bit of, you know, Terry, sorry, "Jesus, do you really think you should say that? Was that a wise thing to say, Jesus?" Well, they think that, but I don't. Peter's always got it's been a bit mouthy. And so when Jesus says, I'm going to get killed very soon, Peter's response is, no, well, even if you are going to get killed, I will die with you. And Jesus said, "Actually, no, in the next five hours, you're going to deny knowing me 3 times. "No, I'm not going to do that." And what does he do? 5 hours later, he has denied knowing Jesus 3 times. Gosh, how does Peter feel right now? 3 years of dreaming, 3 years of being with, like, the man. 3 years, and suddenly it seems like everything's gone. It's not what we thought it would be. Now, Jesus has been raised again. We've seen him. But still, the shame of not trusting, the shame of not believing, The shame of Jesus saying, I'm going to deny you three times. And me saying, no, I'm not going to do that. And then what do? I deny him three times. Exactly what he said I would do. Exactly what I said I wouldn't do. I did. Wonder how many of us have been there. So how does he feel? Dejected? Like a failure? Disappointed? And what do we do when we feel this way about ourselves? When life doesn't seem to be what we want it to be, when we know we've been a bit of a failure, what do we do? What do you do? Well, we go back to what makes us feel comfortable, or we go back to where we started. We try to retrace our steps. Where did it all go wrong? And that's what Peter does too. What was Peter doing before Jesus called him? He was fishing. And so when in this story, Peter says, I'm going fishing, who wants to join me? What he's not saying is, oh, let's go catch some salmon or some carp. It's going to be a fun day out in the boat. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, well, it's done with me. I need to go back to what I was. I'm going to go back to being a fisherman, because he goes back to the boat, not a boat, but the boat, his boat. I'm going to go back to being a fisherman. What makes you feel secure? What do you run back to when things aren't what you think they should be? And then as they're not being very successful fishermen, they see someone on the shore that asks them, have you caught anything? Well, if you're a fisherman and someone asks you if you caught something, what do you want to be able to say? Well, usually you want to be able to say, of course I did. It was this big and this big. And if you're a fisherman and your life leader depends on it, you really want to be able to say, yes, I've caught something. Because if I don't catch something, I've got no money. I've got nothing to sell. Have you caught something? No, I haven't. Try throwing your net onto the other side. That's interesting. When's the last time Peter was told to throw his net onto the other side? It was when he first met Jesus. Throw your net onto the other side. Have you caught something? I've been fishing all night. Throw your net on the other side. But we've been fishing all night, Jesus. But because you tell me to fish, throw the net on the other side, I'll do it. So this person on the shore says, throw your net on the other side. And what do? They throw the net on the other side. And what happens? They catch a lot of fish. And they realize this is Jesus who's speaking to us. And Peter goes to Jesus as fast as he can. Doesn't walk on the water though, it seems. Still fishing. And what does he find when he finds Jesus? There's bread and fish waiting for them. And Jesus must have been preparing this for a while, because it says that the coal is now ashes. It's the best way to cook when it's embers. So Jesus has been there for a while preparing this meal for them. He's preparing himself for them. Bread and fish. When's the last time the disciples saw Jesus feed people with bread and fish? Yeah, 5,000, 7,000. It's really interesting that Jesus is continuously showing Peter and the disciples, hey, remember who I am. Remember what I've done. Look, there's bread and fish here. What did I last do with bread and fish? And then he took the bread and gave it to them. Oh, now that's a bit closer to the bone, isn't it? When's the last time he took the bread and gave it to them? Take, eat. This is my body which I'm giving to you. What is Jesus saying to the disciples right now, do you think? I am who I say I am. Nothing has changed on my side. I predicted what was going to happen. This is all a part of my plan. Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed except for, well, you guys. You're going back to the old way of life. I predicted that too. Sometimes life isn't what we think it should be. And life, when that happens, we do want to go back to the old way of life. Sometimes we can't see what God is doing. Sometimes we just don't have maybe the glasses that God has. Whose glasses are you wearing right now? I have spoken to many people this weekend, and some of you have said, yeah, I've got leukemia and I'm trying to work out, well, what does that mean? with my faith, or kind of that there's so many of you guys that are sick right now, and it's not a surprise to God that you're sick. It's not a surprise that you're sick, and He's not punishing you. So what is this all about? Where is God in the midst of our sickness? Where is God in the midst of our pain? And there's something really interesting that happened at the end of the story. And actually, I didn't intend to say it until it was read at the very end. This was done to indicate how Peter's death would glorify God. Did you hear those words at the very end? How Peter's death would glorify God. And I thought, that's a really interesting way of saying it. How can someone's death glorify God? And then I thought, well, where else does someone's illness or death glorify God? There's the blind man that the disciples and Jesus meet. Do you remember that story? So there's a blind man, and the disciples ask, who sinned? Who sinned to make this person blind? And that was the Jewish way. You know, if someone's got a sickness, someone's got an illness, someone must have sinned. Was it this person? Was it his parents? It's a punishment. It must be. It must be a punishment. And what was Jesus' response? Did you remember that? Nobody sinned. This person was born blind so that my Father might be glorified. Gosh, that's interesting. That's harsh. This person is born blind so that my Father might be glorified. So then the question is, for some of the hardships in our life, whose glasses are we wearing? Are we wearing our glasses? Why is this happening to me? And it's really natural to think that, of course, when something terrible happens, why is this happening? Those are our human glasses, and it's normal to think that way. But what is God's glasses? What is God's view of this thing? This might be happening so that I can be glorified. When I was thinking about that, I was thinking about, I'm sorry, I can't remember who you were who has leukemia. I was thinking, and this was my immediate response. Who better to reach out to people with leukemia than someone who has leukemia and has hope? Who better to reach out to someone who has cancer than someone who has cancer and has hope? There's a gift that you guys have in this church of hope and love and joy and peace that your community needs. They desperately need what you have to offer them. And who better to reach out to these people in this community who have problems, who have pain, who have troubles, who have sickness, than you guys who have troubles and pain and sickness. But you also have hope. You have hope. That is a gift that you have been given. And it's the gift that you have been given so that you, God can be glorified through you reaching out to your community. This week was a bit of a difficult week for me. My own little stupid version of this is, you saw last night, those of you who are here, the big choir that we have. Now, finding a place where that many people can have a rehearsal is not so easy. There's not that big halls, so many of those big halls. But we've been really fortunate in the last 6 weeks, the last 6 years, to have rehearsed in the same place over 6 years. But the place where we've been rehearsing, they're a little bit, they're not well organized. And so we called them four times this year just to make sure. Remember, we're coming to rehearse in November. Yes. Remember, we're coming to rehearse in November. Yes. Next week, the rehearsals start. Now, this is an event organized by my church. Most of the 170 people in that choir, they do not know Jesus. They're singing songs that glorify God. It's an amazing thing, but they don't know Jesus. And we're doing this so that they can hear the gospel. God should be supporting this, right? Everything should go right, shouldn't it? It's His work. Everything should go well. Well, what happened on Tuesday? We received an email from the venue where we're supposed to have our rehearsals saying we've made a really terrible mistake that can't be undone. And the mistake is this: you can't rehearse here this month. It's our fault, but we can't help you. Sorry. Now, again, like if they told us 6 months ago, it wouldn't have been so bad. But there's something else that happens this time of year in the Czech Republic, and that's this: ballroom dancing lessons. So you guys have strictly come ballroom. Well, we do this with a vengeance because ballroom dancing is one of the main things that happen in the Czech Republic. It's part of our national school curriculum. Every Czech learns how to ballroom dance, which was a shock to me when I went to England. When I moved there, every Czech assumed that being a proper Englishman, I could also ballroom dance. My first ball was extremely embarrassing to me and very painful to my partner. I was stomping on her feet. So anyway, but when the Czechs learn to dance, well, they learn to dance before the ballroom season, the ball season starts. The ball season is from February. And so the lessons start in October, which means that everywhere that's big enough to host a choir of 170 people now has ballroom dancing classes going on. So we made a few phone calls. It was very nice to see how people wanted to help us. And some places, you know, they were trying to work things out that they could help us, but nothing really worked out. There was no option. And I was getting a bit frustrated. And then I realized this is really stupid because this morning I led a Bible study about bold faith. Where's my bold faith in this? This morning I led a Bible study about bold faith, and now I'm being nervous and worrying about something that, of course, God knew was going to happen. Where's my bold faith? So we began to talk with some people like, what's happening here, what's happening here, what's happening here? And then we remembered something really quite funny. Last year, as a joke, some of the leaders from my church were meeting in our house to pray about what is the future of our church and when and where we should plant the next church. And as a joke, I said, actually, I think the next church plant will be in the pub behind our house. Why not? There's a lot of us from this community. Why can't we plant a church in the pub behind our house? And I was reminded about that. And I thought, that's funny, because the pub behind our house, they've got a sports hall, two badminton courts. That actually could be a place where the choir could meet. And so we contacted the pub behind our house and said, hi, is there any chance that for the next month, a choir with 170 people could meet in your pub? It would mean that your regulars probably couldn't really come here, and the people who have booked the rooms already, you'd have to tell them that they can't come anymore, but we'd really appreciate it. And what was the response? Well, I happen to know that the owner of the pub was in our concert last year, and her response was, I would love for you guys to be in my pub. I would love for you guys to be in my pub. Now, this is really interesting, because when we thought about it, the pub is actually a better place for us to rehearse than where we have been rehearsing. But we would never have moved. We would never have moved there had the people thrown us out, not thrown us out. It wasn't our choice. We were forced into it. And so now I'm asking, gosh, what is God doing here? Like, just for a joke, last year we said, hey, let's plant a church in this pub. And now our biggest church, our church's biggest outreach of the year is going to happen in this pub. God's glasses, I think, at work there. So now I'm really curious to see what's going to happen next. Now, the conversation that Jesus then has to have with Peter makes Peter feel a little bit uncomfortable. Simon, son of John. Oh, actually, Simon, son of John. When is the last time Jesus called Peter Simon, son of John? Do you remember? Only once before has Jesus called Peter Simon, son of John. And that was when he first met him. When he first met Peter, the first time he said, you are Simon. Well, this is what he said. He said, you are Simon, son of John, and I will call you Peter. That's interesting, isn't it? In those 3 years, he's never used that name. And now he uses that name again. Okay, Simon, son of John, if you want to go back to your old way of life, I understand that. I'm speaking to you where you are right now. I'm speaking to you where your heart is right now, Simon, son of John. Do you love me? And the word love that Jesus uses there in English is translated in Greek is agape. There's two types of love that are going to be used right now. Agape, which is like the unconditional love. Do you love me with all your heart and mind and soul and strength? And how does Peter respond? Yes, Jesus, I love you. But which love does he use? He uses philia, which is kind of like, Jesus, I'm very fond of you. Do you love me unconditionally? I'm really fond of you. There's a lot happening recently in my life. This is as much as I can do. I'm really fond of you. And Jesus' response to that is, feed my lambs. Feed my lambs. All Saints and St. Andrews, do you love me? Not me. I feel very loved by you this weekend. My family feel very loved by you, but do you love me, church in Malvern? Feed my lambs. And what I'm going to say for that, the challenge maybe for you is pray for my lambs. Pray for the people in this city. Pray for your neighbors. Pray for your colleagues. Pray for your friends. Pray for the people sat next to you. Feed my lambs. Pray for my lambs. This city is full of lambs. Jesus then says, do you love me? Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? Again asking, do you love me unconditionally? And Peter says, Lord, you know that I filiate. You know that I'm very fond of you. You know that I'm fond of you. And Jesus responds to that. It wasn't, well, that's not good enough. That's not what I'm asking you. It wasn't that. It was saying, okay, I'll take that. Take care of my sheep. Take care of my sheep. Now, this is interesting because what is Jesus doing here? Peter, who went fishing because he feels like a failure. Life has gone wrong. I made a terrible mistake. I denied knowing Jesus. And Jesus is saying, that doesn't matter to me. That doesn't matter to me. I've always told you, you are the rock. I've always told you that there's a job for you to do. Feed my sheep. Doesn't matter what you've done. What matters is what I'm asking you to do. Feed my sheep. Or take care of my sheep, sorry. And maybe the challenge for the church here is take care of my town. Care for my town. Care for the people who are your neighbors. Care for your work colleagues. Care for the people in your church. Care for the people who are your enemies. And then this is interesting. The third time Jesus asks, do you love me? He doesn't ask, do you love me unconditionally? He says, okay, Peter, we'll do it your way. Are you fond of me? Do you filiate me? Are you fond of me? And this is where Peter really breaks down. Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And he knows that you love him. And Jesus' response to that is, feed my sheep. Feed my sheep. And I would say, how do we feed the people in Malvern? How do we feed the people in Malvern? I think we feed them the good news. That is what he would say to the church in All Saints and St. Andrews. Feed your neighbors the gospel. Feed them the good news. Prayer, care, share. Pray for the people around you. Care for the people around you. Share my good news with the people around you. I know that you're in pain. I know that you have troubles. I know that you are sick. I know that you're old. I know that you're young. I know that you didn't do well in your exams. I know that you are nervous about these things. But I would like you to pray for the people around you. I'd like you to care for the people around you. And I'd like you to share my good news with the people around you. That is the challenge that I think Jesus is giving you guys today for your community. And this is actually something that's interesting. I wasn't going to add this. But then again, Hanka was praying, well, she told me, I really feel that this is something that should be added. And this is an illustration that I sometimes use when working with young people. Four years ago, I was lucky enough to go to Israel. I was swimming in the Dead Sea. Has anyone been to Israel? Okay, have you been swimming in the Dead Sea? It's fun. It's muddy. You get very muddy, and then you have to have a shower afterwards. But it's a great experience. But why are you able to sleep in the Dead Sea? Sleep. Well, you could, I suppose. Why are you able to sit in the Dead Sea? It's because there's so much salt there. Now, because there's so much salt there, what can't be there? Life. There is no life in the Dead Sea. That's what's called the Dead Sea. Now before we went to the Dead Sea, we actually, we were in the Sea of Galilee. That's higher up. The one on the top there, that's the Sea of Galilee. Oh yeah, you see, that's the Sea of Galilee, that's the Dead Sea. Now look at this. It's the same river that feeds both. The Sea of Galilee is full of life. We actually know that there was one time when the disciples pulled out 153 fish. Because we've just read that. It's full of life. Unfortunately, today it's also full of nightlife. It doesn't really feel very biblical. If you go to Tiberias, there's just nightclubs and pubs on the coast, and it doesn't really feel the way it did. But it's full of life, even to this day. How is it possible that the Sea of Galilee that's full of life is fed by the same river as the Dead Sea that is full of death? Why does that happen? And the clue is up there. Does anyone actually know why? Yes. Yeah, exactly. The reason why is this. Because water flows into Galilee. Oops, there you go. I made a terrible mistake. I hit the wrong button. Can you help me? Get me back to the map. Okay, so the water, as Jordan River, it flows into Galilee, and then it flows out of the Sea of Galilee. And it keeps on going into the Dead Sea, but it does not flow out of the Dead Sea. And so what happens is that the water evaporates. It evaporates, but salt does not evaporate. So what's left is salt, not water. And therefore, there is no life. And I think that's the same with Christians. We are filled with the Spirit. We are given so many gifts. We are filled with God's love. And it's not meant to be kept just for us. It is meant to leave us. We are a channel of God's love. What we receive from God, the Holy Spirit we receive, is not meant just for us. It is meant to be come out of us. We are a channel of God's love for our community. There's a way that a friend of mine put it, is Christians are a bit like manure. When we're all together too much, we get a bit smelly. But when we're spread in the fields, we bring life. So there you go. That's my challenge for you as a church. Are you going to be a bit smelly? Or are you going to bring life to this town? You're an amazing group of people. And I think that God's plan for this church is to bring life to Marvin. Do you love me? Yes. Do you love me? Yes. Do you love me? Yes. Pray for my town. Care for my town. Share my good news with my town. Amen.